Leanna Shields, and you're listening to The Cozy Sleuth. Today, Snoops and Sleuths, I have with me Catherine LeBlanc. Did I pronounce that right, Catherine?
Yep.
Here to talk about her books, writing, and all things cozy. Catherine, would you like to introduce yourself to my Snoops and Sleuths and say a little bit about your books?
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. I write under the author name Catherine Michael. And so you can find me, that's Catherine with a capital K-A-T-H-R-Y-N-M-Y-K-E-L. And then I'm also starting to write a little bit under the name Catherine LeBlanc. But if you're looking for me, that's where you're going to find me. I write predominantly quilting cozy mysteries. So they all feature quilting as the main theme. And just about everything I do has some sort of quilting in it, somewhere or another.
How fun.
Yeah.
So is any of your writing inspired by your actual life?
A little bit. I'm writing a new series now, and my husband jokes. He's like, are you sure that's not you and me you're talking about in there? And it might be sort of like my real life, but no, it generally doesn't. With the quilting, I'm writing book three right now, and I'm definitely exploring some of the intricacies of quilters in general. So a little bit, you know, has to do with my real life because I am a quilter. But for the most part, I don't write about my own self or my life. I think. Although some might, you know, my husband might disagree, but.
Well, I find as a writer myself that it's hard not to put at least a little bit of ourselves into any book that we write.
That's true.
So, do you have any advice for those who would want to write their own cozies?
Let's see. I would say join a program or some kind of seek a guru or something of that sort. I actually belong to self-publishing school, and so I think it's seriously overwhelming when you first get started writing and self-publishing specifically. So I think having a nice strong support system when you get started is really good, whether it's a school or a guru or someone's program, something like that.
Absolutely. I remember how daunting it was when I first started writing. Wow, I can't believe it was 10 years ago. Yikes, where does time go?
That's amazing.
And at that point, self-publishing was not as approved of,
yeah,
for lack of a better term, as it is now. In fact, when I first started on Facebook and looking for groups of fellow writers to support, one of the first ones I went to, bang, right there on the comments thing, was self-publishers, such cheaters, da-da-da.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Needless to say, I left that group in a hurry.
Frowned upon back then, huh?
Yeah. But thankfully, attitudes have changed, and...
Oh, yeah. I think self-publishers are definitely taking the world by storm, for sure.
Absolutely. And really, you never know where self-publishing can lead. I was actually surprised this past year and a half ago, that I ended up getting picked up by a small press.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, yeah, I... still will endorse anyone who's getting into writing, consider self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love being part of the small press I'm part of now.
Yeah, it would be, I mean, it's, I don't really know the inner workings of being published by a traditional publishing company. I can only speak to the self-publishing side of it, but I would imagine that it's probably pretty cool. There's a lot of smaller, you know, presses out there now. So it's probably, those presses are probably a lot different than the traditional big houses. And it's probably pretty awesome, I bet.
It's great because you can have that one-on-one talking with your publisher, mm-hmm, where it's like, hey, I found this, can we fix it? Or, hey, I know I'm running behind on my schedule. Sorry about that. Things came up, you know. You're not just automatically going to whoever is in charge of your account in a traditional thing where it's like, oh crud, I just missed the deadline. Eek.
Whereas if you're self-published, you can just kick your own bottom when you miss a deadline.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You can live by, there was a thing I saw on Facebook once that said, I love the sound a deadline makes. I love the sound it makes as it goes whizzing by.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're a self-publisher, you can fully embrace that.
I think so. I would have to agree with that. I was thinking, I do some anthologies with a group of folks. And I was just thinking about it this week, thinking, oh, I don't think I'm going to make this deadline. And what am I going to do if I don't make this deadline? I've already told all of my readers and all my fans and stuff like that, that I'm working on this book, and I've shown them, you know, simulated covers, and I've told them about the story. And I said, what do you do if I decide that I'm not going to make this deadline? You know, like how would I tell them that? And there was nothing better than having that conversation with myself that motivated me to finish that story right quick. And I did. I didn't want to have to be the one to tell them that it wasn't coming, you know?
Yes, because our fans can be the strictest taskmaster there is. When's right. That new book coming? When's the new book coming? I'm dying to read it.
Oh my goodness. Yes, my third book is on pre-order right now, and it doesn't come out until August. And I've heard that more than once. It doesn't come out till when? And I'm like, I'm trying to get it out faster, you know. But I gave myself a nice long pre-order time because I didn't want to be under the strict time constraints that I had given myself with the first two books. I really wanted to be able to breathe and have a life and not be so stressed out with it. But at the same time, I'm trying to get it out much faster so that the fans will be happier, you know?
Yeah. So in your series, do you have a favorite character, or would you get in trouble with your other characters?
That's great. I think that my, it kind of did. Okay. So in the cozy world, you don't kill off your best characters, right? You don't kill off the granny. we don't do anything to pets and things like that. Well, I killed off my granny, and it turns out that she's probably the best character I had.
Oh no.
But I knew what I was doing when I did it. I didn't do it, you know, it wasn't a rookie mistake or anything like that. I knew full well exactly what I was doing when I did it. And she lives on. It's not paranormal or anything like that. So when I say she lives on, she's not a ghost or anything like that, but she lives on through her antics, and she has kind of left things, set things up for her own death. And all of these surprises come to her friends and family after she's passed away. So she lives on through the story. She's not completely gone. And I write some short stories involving her as well as her time before that. And I'll go back and write like prequel type stuff with her in it or whatever. But yeah, it turns out that she's probably the best character I had. She's not even there.
Oh, that's funny.
What are you gonna do? It was a risk. It was a calculated risk that I made. And I think it suits where I was going, and it suits what I was doing with the books and stuff like that. But yeah, I really enjoy her. She's a funny character. And I enjoy writing short stories. I write some short stories with with another co-author who also has a character of similar age. So we kind of have them paired up as buddies, and they sleuth together in some short stories that we have. So that's a lot of fun. But yeah, so I don't know. That's a great question.
Oh, I envy authors who can write short stories. With me, it's like I'll sit down intending to write a short story. Next thing I know, it's a chapter, which means I have to go to the next chapter and the next. Oh, look, whoops, a book.
Yeah, I write on the shorter side. You know, generally cozies are like 45 to 50-ish, maybe a little bit more. And I generally write around the 40,000 word mark. seems to be kind of my sweet spot. And it's not easy for me to write like an 8 or 10,000, but I'm practicing. It's helping me practice and helping me learn the craft a lot better by doing these anthologies and short stories and stuff. So it's valuable. And you know, I like to try to write a short story like around 5,000 words, but it seems like people want more. Like it's just not enough time to get in all the things that people are looking for when they're reading something, you know, all the character development and the setting and all that stuff. So I'm trying to work my way around the 8 to 10,000 mark and stay there, because it's like you could do like 8,000 words on just story and character and not even have a plot yet.
Oh. Boy, do I hear that.
Yeah.
I tried to write a short story that was set kind of between books 1 and 2 of my series. And holy cow, it is so hard to fit the clues, the murder, all the mystery parts of it in a little short story.
Yeah, it is tough. It's tough because people want more. I think of that as when somebody gives me like a 3-star and they say I wanted more, I think of that as the best thing ever, because I think you should give me a 5-star for that, because I made you want more, you know.
Great. Isn't there like an old theater saying, always leave them wanting more?
Right? Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. Those who are in the theater, don't get on me. I know I probably got it wrong.
Don't quote me on that.
Yes. So do you have an author that's influenced your writing?
I think I've done some research on a lot of different authors. I don't think there's any one in particular that's necessarily influence. There's definitely some that I would love to model after, you know, success wise, book wise, writing style, all that kind of thing. But I don't think there's any one in particular. I enjoy like reading Steve Higgs. I enjoy his books. He's pretty popular right now. I don't know. I read a lot of different stuff, and sometimes I don't necessarily get to read the whole book. Sometimes I'm just reading like beginnings or endings, or you know, first and last sentences of chapters. It just, you know, it depends on like what I'm researching or what I'm trying to learn and stuff like that. So it's tough to say. I read a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I hear. Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to peg down any particular influences I have either. It can be hard to figure out like what authors
I know what you're saying. It you know, I don't want to say mimic, but yeah, it's there's just so many diverse styles. And you know, like Donna Andrews is obviously, I don't even compare to Donna Andrews, but she's one of the people that I started looking at when I first started writing, because her murders happen a little bit later in her story. And that's something that I was finding was happening in mine. So I went out searching books where authors got away with having their murders be later in the story. And she's one of the ones that came up. And she does a fantastic job of building in all kinds of stuff that kind of distracts you from the fact that the murder hasn't quite happened yet. You know what I mean? I guess you could say that influenced me a little bit, because, you know, just trying to figure out how do you do it, you know, because when I set out to write my book, I want to make sure that the quilting is a part of the story, but it's not how the characters solve the mysteries. So I want to make sure that I get enough of the quilting in to satisfy my quilting readers, not too much that I'm, you know, sending away anybody who's not interested in quilting. And I feel like if I put the murder at the beginning, why are they going to want to go quilting afterwards if there's a murder to solve? You know what I mean? So I kind of try to put the quilting at the beginning, and then I put the murder after that. So my murder comes a lot later in the book. And I think some people, you know, some people are okay with that. And hopefully I do a good enough job of keeping you interested until we get there. But I just, in my mind, I'm always like, well, it's got to be, you know, I'm not going to go sit in a quilt class if there's a murder to solve. Like, I'm going to be out investigating. I'm not going to be sitting at the sewing machine, you know? So, I don't know. Tangent. I don't know.
No, I completely get that. My editor will not let me get away with putting the murder later than 50% into the book.
Oh, yeah. I definitely try to do it before then. But a lot of people want to see the murder in like the first or second chapter. And sometimes my murders don't come until like chapter 6 or 7 or 8 or so, you know, closer to the 50 mark. So.
Yeah, I hear you. That's,
yeah.
That's how it was with like my first book and my second book. The murders didn't happen until about chapter 4 or 5. But I had so much world building to do beforehand. I had to set up that this is not your typical book. This is set around the ranching community. So I had to, you know, introduce like the stock show in book 2. I had to.
Yeah, there's, it's hard to fit it all in and make it fit the right pace and stuff like that. I think as long as you have the right hooks in each of the chapters at the beginning and you're kind of stringing along, you know, the story and it's moving at a good pace, I think readers will forgive it being a little bit later.
Yeah. So if you were going to sit down with your main character for coffee or whatever your preferred caffeine intake is, what kind of beverage would they have? And what kind of beverage would you have?
Oh my gosh, this goes back to your story. This goes back to your question about, do I put my personal stuff into my stories? I guess I do, because I drink hot chocolate and my main character drinks hot chocolate with no whipped cream as well. So, so I think maybe I do put a little bit of myself in there and I just don't even realize it sometimes. Yeah, so we would sit down to hot chocolates with no whipped cream because you don't need those extra few calories.
Oh, I love hot chocolate, especially when it's cold.
Yeah, just to warm your hands and, well, so good. But I put that in the book and then I thought, well, how many calories is really whipped cream? That's kind of silly. I don't think I ever went to look, but I was like, I need a reason why she has no whipped cream and I don't want to actually say what the real reason is. It's really just because I don't like it when it comes out of those big cans. Oh my gosh. Great.
I have a feeling your main character and my main character, Sabia, would get along so well because she is a major chocoholic.
Yes. I put a pint of ice cream in book 3 because I hadn't done ice cream yet. She had been drinking her hot chocolates when she got back to town. That was like her guilty pleasure or whatever when she left the city and came back home to her hometown. And then in book 2, she was drinking on a cruise. So those were her guilty pleasures, was a few cocktails. And so I said, well, what's going to be her guilty pleasure in book 3? It's going to be the ice cream for sure. Chocolate ice cream or cookie dip or Rocky Road or who knows, fudge ripple or something.
Oh, yum.
A little bit of everything.
Sabia's is chocolate caramel when it comes to ice cream, but she also she has like a package of Oreo cookies that she goes to every time.
Nice. See, that would really be putting my real life in the book if I did that. My main character is a little bit more self-controlled than I am.
Oh
yeah,
my self-control, main... what's that?
I don't know. I really don't know anymore at this point. My theme this week has been, I've been telling everybody, I'm like a bull. I just go like 100 miles an hour at whatever it is that I'm going after. And it's either, there's no like in between. I mean, I'm either off completely or I'm going 100 miles an hour and there's like no in between. That includes self-control. So great.
So outside of writing, what do you have any hobbies that you like to do?
I do the quilting, like I said. I've been doing that for about 10 years. I owned a quilting store, so I sold retail, quilting retail supplies, and I did retail on social media for a couple of years. And so now I do it again for the books. Each book in the series, starting with Sewing Suspicion, has a quilt that goes with them. There's no quilt pattern inside. There's not like a free quilt pattern or anything, but they will have companion quilts that go with them that kind of mimic what the book covers are. Each of the book covers has a different quilt on it. And so as time goes by and I actually finish those quilts, those quilt patterns will become available. I'm about 90% done with book one's quilt, and it's the hardest one. It's called a grandmother's flower garden quilt, and it's traditionally done by hand with like these 1-inch hexagon shapes that are all stitched together by hand. And I'm actually doing 2.5-inch ones by machine, and it's still taking me a lifetime to do. But I'm almost there. As soon as I want to get the quilt finished before I release the pattern. And then the quilts coming after that will be all much easier than the first one. But the first one, I had to pick the hardest quilt in the world. So, but that's really it. I don't have time for anything other than the quilting and the writing. And I do the authoring full time, at least 40 to 80 hours a week. So I really just don't have time for any other hobbies besides those two things. And yeah.
Wow, that is impressive. I'm impressed with anyone who can sew, let alone quilt.
Well, in the quilting industry, we say we don't sew, we quilt. So if you're looking for somebody to sew something for you, that ain't us. It's a little inside joke with the quilting industry that we don't do zippers, we don't hem pants, we don't put buttons on, we don't do anything like that. It's all very artistic and nothing what's the word where you know
nothing know. Technical.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of the word like where you know practical. Nothing practical that you know,
yeah.
None of those practical skills that you learn in home ec or anything like that. In fact, my husband does all the buttons and stitches all the holes in the shirts and things like that. And he does all that stuff. It's kind of funny.
Oh, I personally just knit.
Oh, knitting.
Knit and crochet.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to. I mean, I've done a few scarves and things like that, but I think once the quilting, it's probably very similar in the knitting or the crocheting. Once that bug hits you, there's like, you know, there's nothing else. Like, that's it. That's your hobby, you know?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, I should pick it up again. I've been so busy with my writing and podcasting and everything. My hobbies have kind of gone to the wayside.
Yeah, that happens. It definitely happens. It's good to keep your mind active with those passions, those things that you enjoy, you know? Gives you time to reflect. Yeah.
So how can my snoops and sleuths follow you?
A lot of different ways. So I have, if anybody's interested in sewing or quilting or knitting or whatever, that kind of craft, I have on Facebook a group that's called books for quilters. And so obviously I promote my own books. I promote a lot of books that have to do with quilting, some knitting stuff. And if, you know, if customer, you know, if somebody says, hey, this book is really great and it has something similar, then we'll advertise that too. You can find me under Catherine Michael, author Catherine Michael on Facebook as well. You can find me on Patreon. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok. I try to be a little bit of everywhere, but the main place I hang out is mostly on Facebook. I have an author profile page. I have my own personal page. So Catherine LeBlanc, if you find me, it's, you know, you're welcome to friend me. That'd be fine. I have lots of friends out there. But yeah, I can give you a little list that you can post.
And I'll be sure to include those links in the show's notes.
Yes.
Oh, I've had so much fun chatting with you. I can't believe we're on the last question.
I know, we got through them.
So what is one complaint your characters would have about you as an author?
That's a great question. These are really great questions. I got to hand it to you. Thank you so much. I think one complaint that they would have about me. I think that they would say they're, how do I put this? They would say that they're tired of me making them nod their head or shrug their shoulders or things like that, and that I need some new material. That's what they would say. Yeah.
Oh, that'd probably be a complaint of my characters too. No, mine would probably be to get them to a lung specialist, because I have them sigh and take deep breaths way too often in the first draft.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
It's like, seriously, if I'm going to sigh and inhale this much, I better get to a doctor.
Yeah, I don't have too much of the breathing and stuff like that. Sometimes you get so focused on one thing, you're like, okay, you know, what motion is their body making? And then you totally forget, well, what about the people in the room? Or what about the weather? Or what about the this? What about the that? And you're like, and then the next chapter, you're like, okay, well, I'll focus on the weather. And then you forget about like everything else you're supposed to be doing. There's so much to think about.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Because, and with mine, it's more so because my main character is what I call an eco mage. And the weather actually affects her physically.
Okay.
Especially with her, it affects her hair color mostly.
Wow.
If it's warm out, she has what's described as cherry coke red hair. But right. If it's cold and snowing, it takes on the look of a frosted raspberry.
Okay.
So I always have to remember, okay, what is the weather surrounding this looking like? What is her hair doing?
That's great. My stories are set in New England, so I have a lot of fun with the weather here in New England. It changes at the drop of a hat. And so, so I'm always constantly trying to think, okay, what would the weather in New England be like? And how can I make it so that tomorrow it's like a completely different season. I have a lot of fun with that.
That sounds like Colorado.
Nice.
In book three, I had to describe how it was snowing like the previous day and now the sun came out. Well, a lot of the local news people here have an expression for when the sun comes out after a snowstorm. They call it the solar snow shovel.
That's interesting. Oh, we literally had sleet like a couple of days ago, and then it was 70 degrees, you know, moments later. It's just insane how the weather changes. It's crazy.
Yeah, Weather can be a fun thing to play with in books and in real life, because sometimes you think, okay, if I wrote this weather, no one would believe it. They'd think it was too extreme.
Yeah, it fits perfectly with cozy mysteries, though, because I love the fanciful aspect of cozy mysteries, where you can kind of play a little bit and make things a little bit far-fetched. You know, it doesn't always have to be so exact, you know. So the weather fits right into that perfectly, where it can be so kind of crazy, and it's great. Great. I haven't figured out a way to put my Boston accent in yet, but I have some book covers. I'm a book cover junkie, so I have a lot of book covers and pre-made book covers, and I have a few that will be a series set in Boston, so that I can use like our Massachusetts Boston accent, where we drop all our R's and stuff like that. But I haven't figured out how to really like put that into the current series that I'm working on now. That would be a lot of fun too.
Well, if I can find a way to work the Choctaw language into the book, you'll probably be able to figure out a way to get the Boston accent in there.
I think I'm saving it. It's great.
Oh, I've had so much fun talking with you.
Really great, yeah. I hope. And so will you put links to the books as well? Or?
Yeah, I'd be more than willing to put the links to the books in the notes as well.
Awesome, that'd be great. Yep, book one and two, so Sowing Suspicion and Quilting Calamity are both out now, and then Pressing Matters and Threading Trouble will both be out later on in the year, early next year.
Oh, I love those titles.
Yeah, I had to plan them out all out in advance when I first started with book one, because it was like, you know, we can't just wing these title names. After I came out with such a great name for Sowing Suspicion, there was no winging it after that. So I really had to spend some time planning those in advance. So they're all planned out.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've pretty much winged mine. First one on mine was Sparks of Suspicion. Then it was Stock Show Stalker.
Oh, that's great.
Book three is called Stolen Vows.
There you go. Yeah, that's good.
I haven't figured out book fours yet, but then again, I can't quite settle on when the book four is set, so.
Yeah, I have pretty much the series arc pretty much plotted out. It was fun with some of the ARC readers for book one. They were like, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? The book one does, each of the books is technically a standalone, but they do, you know, go from story to story in order. And I do close out the mystery at the end, whatever the mystery is of the book, I do close that out at the end of the book, but there are some other like bigger mystery type things that are kind of going on throughout the series. And all of that's plotted out already in advance through the whole series. And I had a lot of readers, well, what about this and what about that? I'm like, that's part of the overall mystery that you have to read all the books to find out. Like, I gave you the mystery, I gave you the conclusion, but the rest of it, you're gonna have to wait for.
Oh, and I can't wait to pick up a copy of your books, because they sound great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I literally just won an award for Sowing Suspicion, if you don't mind me saying that.
Wow. Congrats.
Yeah. It was the first ever through a small publishing company. And so that was pretty special. It was like a Reader's Choice kind of award, where I didn't have to pay to get in or anything like that. So that was really cool. And, you know, it was really based on readers voting, and that's kind of awesome, I think. And then right now I'm trying to win the allauthor.com cover of the month challenge right now. I'm in fourth place, and I've been battling for third and fourth place, and we've got like less than a week left to go. So if at all any of your readers can help me out with that, that'd be super.
Well, send me a link and I'll make sure to.
I will. That'd be great.
Because listeners, let's get this book out of fourth and into first.
That, great. Yeah, even they say, I guess the top three are kind of I don't know what the word is, you get accolades for being in the top three. So I want to at least be in at number three spot, but I'd love to win. That would be great. But it'd be fun because I can't run again through this contest until August. So I was like, I got to get it now. I'm so close. It's pretty cool having a little bit of book bling, though. It's really exciting.
Well, listeners, let's see if we can do this.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, Snoops and Sleuths, you've heard another great interview here on the Cozy Sleuth. I'd like to thank my patrons, Regina, Cozy Cub, Dour Bear, and Patty Paul, for their contributions in keeping the show commercial-free and growing. I'd like to thank my Coffee Klatch for their contributions as well. If you'd like to be like Regina and have your name mentioned on the air, join me on my Patreon page at patreon.com/thecozysleuth. Or you can become a member of my Coffee Klatch at coffee.com/thecozysleuth. And if you'd like to hear cozies read by live actors, check out the Cozy Mystery Rats Maze, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time, this is Leanna Shields saying, keep cozy.